columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
This is KKFN, KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. We're joined by Tim Connolly, President of Basketball Operations for the Nuggets. Just one or two questions left for me. You just talked about, you're saying like, hey, I'm a sports fan first. I miss sports. So how excited were you when the news broke last night from the New York Post that ABC and ESPN is releasing the 10-part documentary season on that final ride for the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan?
I can't wait. You know, I love documentaries on any topic. To me, Jordan's the best athlete of all time. You know, best player, you have a spirited debate, but a guy that has had the most impact and been most iconic of all other athletes. I was lucky. I worked for him. I worked around him when he played. So it certainly wasn't prime MJ, but still being around that level of greatness when I was in D.C. Got to know him very well. So I'm a basketball nerd, so I can't wait to watch it as is. And then it's even a little bit sweeter getting to know the guy a bit, so I can't wait.
Last one, and we're visiting with Nuggets President Tim Connolly. Tim, so if you're going to try to get this thing and finish off strong whenever we start back up, what are you going to have to look at? What is going to have to happen for the Denver Nuggets? Is it Jokic, you know, being more assertive? Is it, you know, what will have to happen if you want to finish this thing out strong and win a championship?
Well, I think we've shown during spurts that we can play at that level. I think our success against teams above us in the standings speak to a team that can, when they're playing the right way, they can beat anybody. I think we have the best coach staff in the NBA. So, look, it's all matchups, right? When you get to the playoffs, we need to get hot. We need to make shots. We need to defend at a high level. All things that are obvious answers. But I think our team, really, when the ball's flying around, I think it impacts everything. We've become a more active and connected defensive team. We saw what Nicole did in the playoffs last year. We saw what Jamal did in the playoffs last year. I think we have several guys playing at a high level. But a lot of it is, are you playing your best basketball at the right time? I think there's a lot of teams that can win it. Can they harness that level of play when and if we get back out there? So it should be fun. I'm just fingers crossed that we'll get to answer those questions.
And the very last one for me, Tim, Tim Connolly joining us. How have you personally been staying busy? Now, I know you're probably watching a ton of basketball on Synergy. And Synergy, for those who don't know, it's like a basketball database and comprehensive everything. But are you binge watching Tiger King? Like, what have you been getting into?
I watched Tiger King the night it came out, saw it all within 26 hours. I've been trying to wipe my phone clean from all the memes that Brandon sent me. I don't want HR finding those at all. Thankfully, HR doesn't have access to my phone right now. I've got two young kids. It's been fun being with them 24/7. I can't tell you the last time, probably since I got in the NBA, 24 years ago, where I went more than 10 days without traveling. So that's been unique and that's been fun. Reading a lot. Just trying to stay as informed as possible about what's going on with the virus, the impact it has globally, the economic carnage. We're lucky. We're healthy. We've got family here. We're very fortunate. And also, again, not to sound corny or cliche, trying to be a good communal teammate.
Sure.
If you know anybody that's by themselves, reach out to them. If you have anybody that might have some immunity issues, hey, can I get you groceries? Drop off a pizza, drop off a case of beer. There's a lot of people out there that don't have the same things that we have with family and friends, and as much as you can, help out.
Well, very well said and understood, or it should be anyway. Tim Connolly, the one and the only president of basketball operations, really good friend of the show. Appreciate you stopping by and spending some time with us here on a Tuesday.
I got nothing but time, guys. If you need a commentator about anything, I'm not an expert on anything, but please give me a call.
I love it. Great love stuff, it. Man. Thanks, buddy.
Right. Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya. There he goes, Tim Connolly, Nuggets team president. There was a lot
that
there.
That was great. That was great. Really nice of him to join us and kind of you know, keep us kind of up to date on what's going on, what the process is, and what he's hearing. And obviously, it's just kind of, I guess, what we've all heard. He's just kind of in the wait and see mode here of what's going to be the next step. And so it's that was fun. That was good stuff. I'm glad that he joined us.
What stuck out to you in that conversation? There was a lot there.
There, kind of what I just said, you know, just they're just kind of wait and see, trying to touch base with the players, trying to, you know, give them workouts and see what they're doing. And but they're like everybody else right now, just trying to do little things to be good teammates to each other and the community. And he's kind of like we all are, just hunkered down and just biding our time and hoping this thing passes quickly. What about you? What stuck out to you?
You know, his willingness to play in empty arena format, that's not what any of us want to see. But if the alternative is not playing the games, I think that this could be the easiest way to get this done. That in a month from now, look, you can't even step into the arena without passing a COVID-19 test. But if you establish that everyone is healthy within the group, and when I say the group, I mean both teams, coaches, trainers, and the cameramen and production staff that will be there. You're probably talking about 60 total people, maybe 70. If everyone has a clean bill of health and you can pull this thing off and find a way, I think that games in an empty arena is better than no games at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just what it might have to be, and it kind of is what it is. We're living in different circumstances right now, and things are changing quickly. And if you tell me sports with no fans, okay, I'm fine with that. As a spectator, I'd like Tim said, I mean, I just want to watch some sports. It just helps take your mind off of everything, and it, to me, it doesn't really matter if fans are there or not. Doesn't matter. And if that gets sports out quicker, then so be it. I'm good with that.
Stoke, I do believe, to back to the question about how this season will be viewed, I think it's going to be hard to separate anything that happens moving forward. And we do hope, we do really, really hope, and crossing our fingers that games are played. But I believe regardless of if it's mini series, if it's not even finishing the regular season, but ultimately crowning a champion, however you twist it, it's going to be hard to separate this season from this pandemic. I don't see it like being mentioned unto itself. It's always just the same way that the Spurs first championship under Greg Popovich and that group in the year 2000, it's always mentioned in the same breath as a shortened season. It's still a title. Hell, 50 games. I mean, that's quite a bit. Yeah. But at the same time, it's always just, well, that was the shortened season.
But for me, I don't, you know, I didn't even know that the first championship was won in a shortened season. So I'm like, you just hear how many championships the Spurs have won, and that's just part of the of what they've done. And so I think down the road, like it was, like you said, in 2000, I've forgotten about that. And I don't pay any attention to that. The Spurs won. I think what it will come down to is what it looks like. How does this thing finish up? Will they be able to play a regular playoff schedule? Will it be like a regular playoff schedule? And if that's the case, I think obviously it will be known as, you know, the times that we're going through. You always look at this season with that in perspective, because it doesn't look like they're probably going to be able to play this thing out like it's supposed to be played out. So it might be shortened somehow, some way. But I think if they can keep the playoff structure the same, and look, like Tim said, man, if your team wins it, your team wins it. You're not putting an asterisk by it. Now, some people might do that, but it kind of is what it is. It's like, I don't care what anybody else thinks. Doesn't matter. But certainly it will be looked at, I think, a little bit differently because of these times that we're going through. All of a sudden you have a stoppage of play right towards the end of the basketball season. Now you got to pick up and start back up. So I think for the majority of people, you're probably right. But as time goes on in 20 years, if the Nuggets win, I think, you know, we'll just remember it as the Nuggets winning their first ever champion NBA championship. And that's how I would view it as a Nuggets fan. I don't care how we win it.
Yeah, and I love the way that Tim answered that question. Well, if we win it, no asterisks. If somebody else wins it, asterisk. And I'm seeing some RamosLaw.com text messages coming in here. And someone says, hey, you're going to take a chance on infecting the players? Not cool, man. No, I said that, look, if we get to a point where the tests are... We keep on hearing, actually, and there's other people chiming in about this, that there's supposedly a test coming that gets the results in just minutes and is not overly expensive. So if we get to that point here over the next 3 to 4 weeks, and we can, like day of the game or as right. these guys enter the arena, testing these guys for COVID-19, everyone comes up negative, then you know you're not going to play the game with positive results. But I'm just so...
That makes it tricky. I think that makes it really tricky because what happens if all of a sudden, you know, somebody tests positive for, say, the Pacers, and then what are you going to do then?
Like, only he can't play or just not play the game because
right,
guy,
do you not play that whole game? And then now what is everybody else doing? Because now they're playing more games, but now the Pacers' whole team can't play and they got to go into quarantine or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I think that makes it a little bit difficult if you're playing by those rules, because what happens if a couple of players test positive in one team in Miami? How does that affect everybody else as far as do they keep playing games and just that team can't play? I think that would make it difficult to do that way. But I don't know, man. It's just obviously it's crazy. And I think everything is on the table, obviously, for the NBA and the baseball and hockey. All these sports are supposed to be going on right now, and none of them are. So I think everything is on the table, and they're looking at all options, and they're going to try to make the best of this bad situation right now. I think ultimately that's what it's going to come down to.
And to your point, I think that's all we can do, is just try to make the best of a bad situation. Hopefully, you know, the cavalry is coming in terms of the quick tests, maybe a shot. Why can I not think of the word, a vaccine?
Vaccine.
So, you know, we'll see, but we don't know. Yeah. We don't know. And the not knowing right now is, I'm not going to say it's killing me, but it's kind of driving me crazy because we don't know how long this is going to last. Not sure if you saw this. Governor of Virginia yesterday put the stay-at-home order out till June, till like the middle of June. And it's like, holy moly.
Yeah.
The China Basketball League went to go restart their league. Not sure if you saw this. They had to shut it right back down.
Wow.
And that's in the last 48 hours or so. So we just don't know.
Yep. Uncertainty everywhere, I think, for everybody in general. And obviously uncertainty with sports. But, yeah, that's it, man. It's the not knowing. That can drive you crazy. I think the best thing is to do is take it day by day.
Hey,
live in the moment, take it day by day, try to stay healthy, and then try to get the most out of that one day. Then you move on to the next day and try to conquer that day. And that's all you can really do. It's hard to look out too much in the future and try to plan on what's going to happen, what you're going to do, what is going to be there. You know, it's just day by day, trying to make the most out of it and stay healthy.
Yeah. Okay, quick things here. One, did you see the story that because of the hysteria surrounding Tiger King and the story that gets told about the big cat rescue owner, Carol Baskin, there's so much hype around the story and the disappearance of her first husband.
They're opening the case?
The Florida sheriff is using the hype around, this is from an article I'm reading right now, off the Netflix series Tiger King, to seek new leads in the case of Jack Donald Lewis missing case from 1997.
I love it. I love it. She ought to be in the pen right next to Joe. I mean, I'm telling you, it's she's the craziest one in the whole show. She is absolutely nutso. Where else is that guy? Hey, she killed him. I mean, that's just what I believe happened. I don't know how you could tell me anything else. You see how crazy she is, and you think what he just disappeared? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
I'd have to tie my two brains behind my head. What is it?
Tie one half of your brain behind your back.
That yes, that and tie a lot of other things behind my head, and to think that she's not involved somehow, some way.
crazy.
It is crazy. We've seen this happen before, though, the popularity of something. I know there was a podcast called Serial from 2 or 3 years ago, and the popularity of it reopened the case and literally reopened this dude's case. He's been sitting in a cell. And there they were back in court because of a podcast telling the story. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I believe that I am dressing up. This is a tentative plan in March. I will be Joe Exotic for Halloween, and Ashley is going to be Carol Baskin. And our son is going to be one of the Tigers.
Perfect. That is awesome. I love it.
Oh,
I love
gosh.
It. That's good stuff. Hopefully you'll be able to trick-or-treat by October.
Right.
So hopefully that'll be something that we can all look forward to.
Good point.
Are you growing your beard out?
Dude, I
started a little beard challenge. It sounded like you were in.
Dude, if I grow out my facial hair, I have what's called a dirt stash. So my side, one half of the family, the side that matters, is Mexican, and so I get this little Mexican dirt stash, and if I let it go, now I'll shave on a Friday morning, and then the next time I'll shave it is like a Monday morning. By Monday morning, I'm looking like I'm driving a windowless white van. I look like a danger to people. So,
well, this is the time to grow it out. Nobody's looking at you. Nobody's seeing it, really. So that's why I decided to just do it. I've been doing mine for about 8 days, and I just have never tried it and done it. So I was like, you know what? This would be a great time to see what it would look like. I don't understand, you know, your hang up with just having like a bad looking mustache.
Well, all right, how about this? I'll let it go till Monday, and we'll see where we're at.
Let it go until Monday. So let's do our elevator pitch, and I want you not to have shaved before we do our elevator pitch. I can take a good look and see what you look like.
Oh, gosh.
Can you survive? What is today? I can't even. Today's Tuesday?
That's a long time, actually.
It is a long time. I think you got to commit to it and do it for the show. Do it for the people. Give the people what they want. The people want to see it.
Let me think about it. Let me think about
that. That means you're not committed. If you have to think, why do you have to think about it? You got to commit to it.
Let me run it by the wife.
You got to run it by your wife if you can.
Well,
grow
I can
your
use her as a shield if I really
right.
don't want to do it.
Oh, very smart. Very smart. Okay. Fair enough. But I'm doing it. You know, I've never, like I said, I've never done it before, not the full beard. When I first got here, Zach, in 2007, I grew a goatee. And I just rocked the goatee for most of the year. Yeah, I just wanted to do something different. And I signed a one-year deal here. I had been hurt the whole year before. Football was miserable. And I signed here, and I said, you know what, I'm going to just change things up. And so I grew the goatee out during the football season and kept it, I think, for pretty much the whole year. And
was the wife cool with it?
Yeah, she was cool with it. She didn't care. But that's all I've ever done. And so now I'm just like, you know what? I want to see what it looks like.
I got a question for you. You know, we start the show the same way pretty much every single day. Nathaniel Music hits and come in and say, we are here. What do you think about pivoting on that and me saying, hey, out there, all you cool cats and kittens, the way that Carol used to. Hey, out there, all you cool cats and kittens.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, my gosh. You know what? I say every now and then that'd be good. Yeah, okay. I think you ought to throw that in there every now and then. Just not every day, but just for a change up. Keep people on their toes, right?
I like it.
We don't want to become too rigid, so I don't mind that. I think that would be good.
All right, maybe we'll mix it in. I got to give
her podcast or whatever the heck she does. Oh my goodness, drive me nuts. Her and her husband, holy cow, they drive me nuts.
Yeah, it's something. It's something. Two shout outs really quick. Derek from Westminster on the RamosLaw.com text line. He said, thanks for being on air every day during this troubling time. Zach and Brandon, you guys are doing a great job. And I started working a night shift, and I now have a chance to listen to your show in its entirety. And you guys are doing a great job keeping my mind off things. Keep going. Looking forward to brighter days. And thank you guys for the great work.
Awesome.
Yep. So shout out to you, Derek. We appreciate you as you listen to this later tonight while working your night shift. And Thomas on Instagram sent me a direct message. If you're on Instagram, hit me up, ZBuy23. You could send me a DM anytime. He says, hey, man, I just want to let you know that I've been listening to you and Stoke for a few years now, and it's always been a stress reliever for me, as I love the Broncos and Denver. You guys always keep it fresh, and you guys are helping me as well as many others during this time to keep killing it. You got a listener and a fan for life here. That's from Thomas on Instagram.
Awesome. So, appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate that a lot.
I got to chime in also. So, you know, I was telling you I was doing some steaks last night, and I did the salt on it, let it marinate overnight, right? And then took it out 30 minutes before, put some ground up pepper on it, right? And just let it sit out there for a little bit, and then heat the grill up and got it really hot and followed the directions, and, you know, 4 to 5 minutes on each side. Then I had some butter and threw some, like a teaspoon of butter on top of it.
Nice.
And I tell you what, it came out really, really good. I was surprised with how good it came out. So thumbs up on my steaks last night. They turned out good.
Beautiful.
Trying something for the first time, and normally I throw just some marinade steak rub on it, but wanted to do something a little bit different and change it up, and it was a good change up.
Yeah, I've been cooking a ton myself. Tomorrow we're gonna do ribs. I'm breaking them out tonight. Separating them, letting them marinate for 24 hours or so, then slow cook them through the afternoon. And I got actually fan hosts taking shots at me because
I saw
they asked me to do this fan at home and just, you know, what's life like at home for me, which is terribly boring right now. So I wasn't sure what to do. You know, I'm just
sure.
I'm like everyone else. I'm locked in the house, which is, I guess, why we're doing this. So it got put up on social media, and I just flippantly said, as I'm, you know, stirring some eggs and cooking some breakfast potatoes, like, I'm the best cook at the fan. And boy, I need a bulletproof vest. I got shots coming at me from every direction. Orlando and Dan Jacobs and Mike Evans.
Dan T. Self-proclaimed best barbecuer in the country, Dan T. is.
Well, he posts a lot of his stuff, and he's got it going on. He's got it going on.
You know what? If I would say right now who the best is, just to kind of take a step back and kind of think about the different people that we have on the fan, I would think that Slareth would be a pretty good cook for some reason. I would think that he, you know, being from Alaska and he has the stinking good green chili stuff, I would think that he would be a good cook.
I would not be surprised if Slareth's if it's a front, you know, much like the lawn, like, you know,
right.
Now he pays extra for them to come and do it in the middle of the night.
That's
but
true.
You know that he's got help with that lawn, and when he, you know, what to do with.
So
the
he's not
going to
really do the barbecuing.
I don't think so.
He's paying somebody. He's paying brothers to come in there and hook him up.
There you go.
And then he unveils it, and yeah, that makes sense, Zach. That makes sense. So, I'd take him off the list. It might have to be Dan T. You know,
it might have to be
Dan T. I've never had any of his barbecue, but supposedly it's pretty good.
That's what I hear.
And I saw DeHuff on Twitter talking about how good his guacamole is.
That's right.
Is what he was calling you out about. So
I would not want DeHuff's fingers touching anything that I'm going to eat.
No, absolutely not.
I would just say that right out the gate.
Yes, absolutely not. You wouldn't want to eat that.
Hey,
that's
real,
for sure.
Real quick, what did you make of the news that came out in the last 24 hours that, look, we're under the assumption that these teams were pitching Tom Brady. It was Tom Brady who pitched Tampa Bay. Did you see that story?
I did. Interesting. Very interesting.
He had his mind made up before this thing got started.
Well, yeah, it looked like, obviously, like we talked, I mean, Tom's not going to go on this thing without doing some studying and figure out where he wants to go. And I think he knew before anybody that he wasn't going back to the Patriots. So you start looking at where's a good fit for me. Where do I want to go? What system do I want to play in? What personnel do I want to have around me? And you start looking at Tampa Bay, and I think that he realized that that was his best spot. And, you know, that he kind of had to let them know that he wanted to be there and that he still had good football left in him. So certainly he's not a spring chicken. And they're moving away from a young quarterback in Jameis Winston, and they're not pursuing him anymore. Their number one overall pick, that's a free agent. And I understand he had 30 interceptions, but still, at the same time, he's a lot younger than Tom Brady.
Right.
So it
turns out that, and I'm sure you saw this, but them saying that if we couldn't get Brady, we were going after Bridgewater.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, they
said
Jameis was the third option for them in Tampa. That just came out earlier today.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. Wow was right. All right, I've waited all day for this.
Oh, it's my time.
This is your time. You are the only wide receiver here on the Fan. Right now, Mike Pritchard not in the mix as much anymore. You are the wide receiver here. You looked at this class and you put together your top five wide receivers coming out in this year's draft. The five from Stokely in order is coming your way next. All right, Stoke. I've been waiting for this all day long.
Well, wait no longer, my friend.
Your top five wide receivers coming out of this year's draft. Before you do it, though, before you do it, hold on. Give me 1 second. I am right now, you know what I'm doing.
Writing something down.
Yes, I am.
You only had 10 minutes to do it during the break.
That's true.
You're planning on doing it right now.
That's true, but I was up socializing. You know me.
Right. Yep. Gossiping and talking.
I predicted the five guys that you have. So I'm showing Steven. I have it written down already. Okay. All right. So I'm anxious, and you've watched tape on all these guys, right?
Yes.
Okay. Are you going to count down from 5 to 1 or 1 to 5?
No, 1 to 5.
Okay, perfect.
1 to 5.
Perfect.
We'll start at the top, and it's Alabama's Jerry Jeudy. No surprise there. The guy can do it all. He's a total package. 6'1", 193, ran a 4.45 at the combine, which is plenty fast enough, and he's the best route runner of this group. So he's got great hands, got great instincts, just a complete wide receiver. It's not just a speed guy, not just a big guy, a little bit of everything. He's just a complete package. He's a do-it-all wide receiver that's big enough to make the plays down the football field and go up over the top and make the plays, fast enough to stretch the football field, great route runner, great technician. So to me, it's Jerry Jeudy, and if he's anywhere close and you're looking for a wide receiver, if you're the Denver Broncos, you try to move up and go get him. If you got to move up to number 10, if you got to move up to 9, he's available there and somebody's willing to deal with you. I think he's that good of a football player that you take that risk and you take that opportunity and you move up if you're John Elway and you go get that guy if he is there.
Do you see, and like you, I am in love with Jerry Jeudy. Do you see any weakness when you cut on the film?
No, it's hard. It's hard to find when you're, I mean, he's such a great route runner, in and out of his breaks, catches the ball well. He's 6'1", 193, so he's not undersized, and he's a 4.45 guy. So
right.
It's really hard to see weaknesses there.
It looks like, and I'm just kind of plucking this out of thin air after watching Alabama play week in and week out, Jerry Jeudy is as slippery as a wide receiver as I think you're going to find. Like, he is tough to just get your arms around. He can spin over both shoulders. And some guys can do it well, you know, one direction and camp the other. Jerry Jeudy, I mean, he looks like a dreidel at times. He is freaking good.
No, he's awesome. And you know, for whatever reason, you see mock drafts where he's kind of going there 10, 11, 12, 13. And he could be available with a run on the quarterbacks, a run on offensive linemen, tackles, and you throw in a couple defensive players there. Next thing you know, he might be available around 11 or 12, and you might be able to move up there and go get him. And, I mean, what a 1-2 punch you'd have, and what a terrific target for a young quarterback. You know, for a young quarterback, I think the most important thing to have is somebody that you can rely on, somebody you can trust, somebody that you know where they're going to be. And when you look at route running and being a technician, and that's what Jerry Jeudy is, he's going to be where he's supposed to be. And he's going to be precise with getting in and out of his breaks. And that's so important for a young quarterback. And he's light years ahead of, you know, most of these guys when it comes to his route running ability.
All right. So Jerry Jeudy, the number one, according to Brandon Stokely, 15-year NFL receiver. Jerry Jeudy, number one coming out of this draft. Who's number two?
Number two, I got Justin Jefferson from LSU. Love this kid, 6'1", 202, excuse me. He has it all. Another guy that I love the way he runs routes. I love the way he can stop on a dime. You watch him, and you watch him with the football in his hands. He's just so smooth, so fluid. And obviously, just had a terrific season this year at LSU, as most everybody did on their offense. So I just think that this is another guy that runs routes, can go up and get the football over guys and make plays down the football field. He can do a little bit of everything for your football team. So for me, Justin Jefferson out of LSU is my number two wide receiver.
Boy, he is such a good player, too. After the catch guy as well, big. I mean, you mentioned that 6'3", 192 is what I have him on ESPN.com.
I got him at 6'1", but...
Oh, really? Justin Jefferson from LSU?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he might be 6'3". I mean, who knows? I mean, you look at different ones. I mean, it could be 6'1", 6'3". I'll go to his combine
profile,
and that'll have it. But
ESPN.com, and they get a lot of stuff wrong on ESPN.
6'1". Okay. 6'1", 202 at the combine. 4'4", 3 guys, so another guy that can move. You know, big guy. You look at a guy like Jerry Jeudy, 4'4", 5", 4'4", 3". I like that range right there. Especially at the combine. Usually a little bit tougher to run really good times at the combine. So plenty fast enough, big enough to go up and make plays over guys. And we saw that week in and week out from him at LSU. He just delivered in a huge way this year. So this guy is one of those guys that I think would be a perfect fit for your number two spot outside of Cortland Sutton. Pair him with Drew Locke for the next decade. I think you got a great thing if you can get your hands on Justin Jefferson.
These are some of Justin Jefferson's game on the road against a ninth ranked Texas team earlier in the season. 9 catches, 163 yards, 3 touchdowns against number 7 Florida. 10 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown. You look at his game against Alabama. 7 catches for 80 yards. Against Ole Miss, 9 catches for 112 yards. And then when you get into the SEC championship game, big game against Georgia, number 4 ranked, 7 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Against Oklahoma in the college football playoff, the Peach Bowl, 14 catches for 227 yards.
How many of them things?
And not one, not two, not 3, ooh, but 4 tutties against Oklahoma. And then in the national national championship game against Clemson, he goes for 9 catches for 106 yards. So against the better competition on the schedule, you saw the best of Justin Jefferson, and that may be my favorite attribute about that kid.
Yeah, he's another guy that can do it all. So he's my number two player, Justin Jefferson.
All right, so we got Jerry Jeudy number 1, Justin Jefferson number 2, a pair of JJs. You get to number 3 of your favorite receiver coming out of the draft. Who you got?
Denzel Mims, a guy that Cecil put me on, and the guy that I watched a little bit of this year when I was watching Baylor play. 6'3", 207, so another big guy, but faster than the first two. 4'3", 8 guy. 4'3", 8 at the combine at 6'3", 207. So a guy that can flat out go get it, a good route runner, big body guy, a perfect addition outside of Cortland Sutton. I love his speed. You want to talk about almost a perfect combination of speed and size. You look at a guy like Denzel Mims, and when we were talking to Cecil 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, Cecil was like, you got to watch film on this guy. Watch film on this guy, and I came back to him. I said, well, how is this guy with his size? I didn't think he was going to be as fast as that, and Cecil told me, yeah, no, he's going to be a 4-3 guy. I said, well, how is it possible that he's going to be in the second round? It's just not possible that this guy goes in the second round, and now it doesn't look like he's going to go in the second round. So he's got it all. He really does, and he's a good football player. Hands saw a few drops from him, but look, he has a potential to be a special receiver with the size and the speed that he has, and very productive wide receiver in college.
Yeah, Mel Kiper has him going 22nd overall to the Minnesota Vikings. So he's your third favorite receiver coming out of this draft. What do you got at number 4?
Henry Ruggs, the speedster, the 4-2 guy at the combine, 5'11", 190s. a guy that you look at his stats. We dissected it yesterday, Zach. They don't blow you off the page, right? It's not like, wow, this guy's 8 catches here, 10 catches here. So is there some concern there? Yeah, absolutely. But he has the speed that can just flat out scare a defensive coordinator, make him have some sleepless nights, make that secondary have some sleepless nights. And this football team needs speed, and Henry Ruggs is the fastest that wide receiver that you can get. And so bigger guy than, you know, maybe you would kind of expect for a 4'2 guy, 5'11, 190-ish. So not a rail thin guy. Got some size to him, got some bulk to him. So I love the speed. If he had more production, he'd be higher on my board. So that's why I got Henry Ruggs at 4.
Okay. So you got Jerry Jeudy, number 1. Justin Jefferson, number 2. Denzel Mims, number 3. Henry Ruggs, number 4. We still have not heard the name CeeDee Lamb, the wide receiver coming out of Oklahoma,
yeah,
who Mel Kiper has mocked at 17.
Right.
To the Dallas Cowboys, does he make it onto your top 5 list?
Zach, I'm going to put your mind at ease here. He doesn't make it. I got number 5. I got Chase Claypool.
Wow.
I'm going with Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame over CeeDee Lamb, 6'4", 238. Let that just sit there for a little bit, Zach. 6'4", 238 wide receiver Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame. And, oh, by the way, he ran a 4.42 at the combine.
Jeez.
Okay. You want to talk about DJ Metcalf type of body,
DK,
type of frame?
Yeah.
I think that's what I said.
DK.
Yeah, what did I say?
Oh, you said DJ.
No, I said DK.
Ah!
Steven, go double check that. Sometimes my K's and J's sound the same. Okay? DK Metcalf. That's what this guy looks like. You know, not the physique and not the body, not the biceps, but 6'4", 238, 4'4", type of guy. He can run routes. He can go up and freaking get the football, and he's fast. You talk about a guy where, you know, stuff hits a fan for your quarterback. You don't know where to go with the football. Throw the football up to Chase Claypool. I think he's going to be an instant impact player his rookie season. He's going to have, if you put him in the right situation, a year like a DK Metcalf. And for me, the size, the speed, you can't teach those things, and he's got that combination. I think he's going to be a really, really good NFL wide receiver. And so that's my top 5. Jerry Jeudy, 1. Justin Jefferson, 2 out of LSU. Denzel Mims, 3. Henry Ruggs, 4. Chase Claypool, 5. And the toughest part for me, Zach, was 2 and 3. Jefferson or Mims. That was really, really difficult for me because, you know, I love Denzel Mims. I gave a slight edge to Justin Jefferson. I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those guys, but that was really the toughest part for me. I do like CeeDee Lamb. I think he's going to be a good NFL wide receiver. He's just not in my top 5. I'm not just going to put him there because, you know, everybody else loves him. I'm just not going to do it.
I get that. And I love that about you. You are doing this unto yourself. You're not paying attention to this mock, that mock. You're using your eyes, and you are uniquely qualified to do that. But I have been trying to squeeze it out of you like an orange for the last month. What don't you like about CeeDee Lamb?
Zach, it's hard to pinpoint exactly. Sometimes you just have that feeling, you know, that gut instinct. Sometimes it's just the it factor. Right, when you look at a guy, we've talked about it a lot, like a guy like Philip Lindsay, he just has the it factor. No matter what happens, he's going to rise to the top, and he's going to be just fine, and he's going to get the job done. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. I just don't love CeeDee Lamb. I just don't love him.
Like, I want you, like, because I want to be receptive to what you're telling me. When it comes to CeeDee Lamb, I really like what I see out of CeeDee Lamb. I love the contested catch ability. I love the after the catch stuff. He's got a great set of vacuum hands. But I'm willing to let you sort of move me off my post.
No, I don't want to move you. I don't want to move you.
Well, good thing.
That's not what I'm here for.
Well, good thing, because you're not coming close to doing it.
Okay. Well, I'm not trying to. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to. He's a very productive wide receiver. There's a reason why all these people have him going really, really high. There's a reason why, you know, he's one of the top rated wide receivers coming out of college. Why he's one of the most productive wide receivers. It's because, you know, you turn on the tape and he makes a lot of plays. So just for me, he's just not my favorite. it's just not my favorite, Zach. He's not, you know, you look at 4-5, 4-5 at the combine. That scares me a little bit. I want a little bit faster than that. Now, that's not the end-all, be-all. It is the combine. You turn on the tape, and he does a good job of breaking tackles and making plays, obviously. So, just not my favorite.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I'm not going to keep asking about it. So we'll just have to sort of agree to disagree on that one, and ultimately time is going to tell.
That's right.
What type of NFL player CeeDee Lamb is. I thought your list, I pegged because I tried to predict what you were going to do.
Okay.
I thought you were going to go Jerry Jeudy number one, I'm not going to give you any pushback there. I did predict that you were going to go Justin Jefferson number two.
Okay.
You have loved this kid, and the more that I went back and looked at him on a week-to-week basis, couldn't be more impressed. I did have you taking Ruggs third instead of fourth. I had Mims going fourth.
Okay, you, so you just flipped those guys. Yep.
And then I had you picking Lamb as your fifth favorite wide receiver, and you picked Chase Claypool, who really, you know, one of these guys doesn't have to do with the other. Just because I love CeeDee Lamb, Chase Claypool, holy moly. I mean, this kid's story, first of all, he grew up in British Columbia. And this guy was not some sort of highly recruited player until, you know what he started doing? I read this. He started posting his highlights to Facebook.
Wow.
And some of his Facebook highlights went viral. Eventually, by the end of high school, he became a top 20 receiving prospect. And then he lands in South Bend. But even then, he did not have a great start to his career. How about this? He had more special team tackles in his first year at Notre Dame than he had receptions. And he just did the slow climb, and there he was at the end of this thing looking like a first-round prospect. So,
yeah,
pretty cool story there.
No, I love that, though. You know, a guy that kind of had to fight and claw to get the recognition and to get on the football field and play special teams. You might be might have to do both at the NFL level. And at that size, with that speed, 6'4", 238, running a 4.42, I think he can do a good job on special teams also. So, a guy that you know, could have the type of impact of a DK Metcalf. Now, where will he go? I've seen some places, some mock drafts that have him going in the second round, some that have him going late first round. I just think you look at his size, his speed, and his ability that you're going to have one of those teams late in the first round that just say, you know what, this guy would be perfect for our offense. I mean, you look at a team like the Baltimore Ravens, and I mean, a guy that can block in the run game, right? You're 6'4", 238. You better be able to block in the run game, okay? So, I mean, you're talking about a perfect fit for that type of offense. If you're the Baltimore Ravens, how do you let a wide receiver like that get past you and you not take him? Because you throw it up, a jump ball specialty, and with Lamar Jackson's ability and Chase Claypool's ability in the run game to be a dominant blocker, but also his ability to just go up and get the football and be a deep threat. And on the other side of the football field, you got Hollywood Brown,
right,
and his speed,
right,
to go with that offense. I mean, I'm telling you, that'd be a scary thing. So I don't think this guy gets out of the first round. I really don't. I think he's just too good of a prospect and too much talent there for teams to overlook.
Well, it's going to be interesting. He's rising a little bit. Mel Kiper has him being selected by the Green Bay Packers with pick number 30 in the first round. Wouldn't surprise me if he continues to rise. You gave his 40 time there, talking about Chase Claypool from Notre Dame. You gave his 40 time, 4.42.
Uh-huh.
How about his vertical? Over 40 inches.
Ooh.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, really?
I mean, go up and get it. Look, somebody might just be the beneficiary of him right there at the end of the first round, and he ends up being the best wide receiver in this draft class. I mean, you could see that happening with what the dimensions that he has and the things that he can do if he goes to the right situation. And usually at the end of the first round, most of those teams have pretty good quarterbacks, and they had pretty good years last year. He could be what about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Oh, my gosh.
You know, putting somebody like that in their offense.
Oh, my gosh.
So, You know, you just think about some of the spots that he could land in, just like DK Metcalf and where he landed. It wasn't, yeah, he went in the second round, but he went to the perfect situation with the perfect quarterback, and he just had an unbelievable rookie season. I could see that playing out for Chase Claypool, and you look at all these wide receivers at the end of the year and him having the best overall statistical year as a rookie.
Yeah, interesting. And by the way, I was looking at DK Metcalf last night. DK Metcalf like had a better first season as a pro than he did any year when he was at Mississippi.
Right.
He just was not a great college player. But like the conversation we were having yesterday about Ruggs.
That's right.
Because he's not – is that where your brain just went?
Yes.
Because the knock against Henry Ruggs, we're going to talk a little bit more about this tomorrow because there's a just as recent example that we can point to that just because he's not a – unbelievable shooting star in college doesn't mean that he's not going to be a great pro. And I was not a DK Metcalf guy. And really part of it was because of that reason. Like, this guy is not even the best receiver on his own team.
Right.
And I just don't, I am shedding that sort of mindset here moving forward.
Yeah, I think you have to be open and receptive, and you have to project. And we talked a lot about it yesterday when we were talking about Henry Ruggs. And I think when you look at DK Metcalf, the thing that helped him a lot is his mindset. That guy's a worker. He grinds, and he worked on his craft. He studies. He's a professional. He's a pro. He goes about his business the right way. And you can tell that he put a lot of time, energy, and effort in getting better and improving on his route running, being able to be a complete wide receiver, not just being a one-trick pony, not just being a go-route guy, line up and we'll just throw you the deep ball type of guy. You can't just get away with that in the NFL. You got to be able to run different routes, and certainly you look at him and how he progressed and how much better he got is a testament to him, his work ethic, and just being a young wide receiver that was receptive and that wanted to get better. So when you look at a lot of these receivers, you have to project moving forward what they're going to be in the NFL, and a lot of it is what kind of competitor are these guys? Do they work at it? Are they committed to it? Do they love football? So a lot of those things, those intangibles, they matter, because just because you're one way in college, that doesn't mean that's the way you're going to be in the NFL.
Real quick, and I just got to get this off the top of my head. You mentioned Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, there in Baltimore. You said, hey, what about putting Chase Claypool on the other side of him? I just want to throw this out there because I was looking at this last night because I absolutely have no life. Marquise Brown fell off a cliff after the first 2 weeks of football. I mean, fell off a cliff. Because you remember the way he started the season, right?
Dolphins.
Against the Dolphins in that 59-10 Ravens victory. He had four receptions for 147 yards and a pair of touchdowns. He had like an 83-yard touchdown, averaged about 40 yards a catch. Moving forward from week three, you look at his games. I'm talking about games like two receptions, 15 yards. One reception, 6 yards. Three receptions, -2 yards. One reception, 1 yard. Two receptions, 23 yards. Three receptions, 20 yards. Four receptions, 20 yards. He had like a Sammy Watkins type start to the season.
Right.
And then that rookie, you know.
Well, yeah, you're right. He's a rookie. We got to remember that. But also, you got to remember what the offense the Ravens play in and what they're doing.
It's most rushing yards, right?
They're running the football. They're pounding the football. You're talking about a young football player that, and he was also dealing with a foot issue throughout the course of the season. So
you
look at all those things and kind of put it in context, not just the stats, but kind of the whole story there. I think it tells a bigger story than just kind of looking at the stats and say, you know, he didn't have a productive year. And, you know, he's a young wide receiver. So we'll see what it looks like in that offense. Obviously, you're not going to get the opportunities of a Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver.
Sure.
But it's going to be interesting to see year two what it looks like with Lamar Jackson and him, and if they try to open it up and what that looks like, because obviously he's got a lot of favorable matchups.
Right. No, there's no question.
A lot of one-on-one matchups for wide receivers with the Ravens offense.
And that's good context, because it's hard to be some sort of big-time receiver as a rookie where your quarterback is running for over 1,200 yards. that's good context. All right. Hey, we had a blast again today, and we already have some great stuff lined up for you tomorrow.
James Palmer.
James Palmer of the NFL Network joining us. Shout out to Tim Connolly, Nuggets team president, for joining us today. If you missed that, you can go back and check it out in the podcast, or we're going to upload it to the newest edition of Mile High Hoops podcast in this dry season that we're in right now. So, Stoke, have a great rest of your day, and looking forward
buddy.
To do it again tomorrow.
All right, my man. Take care.
All right. Shout out Steven Priest. Great job, and we'll run it back.
Thanks, Steven.
Thank you, Steven. Tomorrow between noon and 3, we got The Drive coming up next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.